Okay, good morning and welcome, all of members. We welcome the our deputy minister. We welcome the members of the committee. We welcome the officials from BELCO. We welcome the observers who are already here in the committee from. By the way, so what's the name of the NGO?
Economic
Justice Network. And I saw a concept survey, it talks about tax justice, whatever that means. Colleagues, can we get apologies? I do want us to record the apologies if there are any. It's not here. We'll then take that later for that for record. But let me just indicate, Honorable
Chair, for the record, at 5 to 10, I'll quickly go to the Chief's Forum, and then I'll come back and return.
5 to 10?
Yes.
Okay, not that thank you. We should be done by 12-ish, past 12-ish, somewhere there. I know that there are members who want to leave at 12:30. Now, honourable members and deputy minister, we took a decision that there are quite a number of developments internationally that are taking place, and as you yourself are aware, the world is an ever-changing environment, both within the African continent, in Asia, in Europe, in the Americas, occasioned by various variables. Sometimes there are civil wars, sometimes there is a rise of religious fundamentalism, sometimes there is a rise of insurgency and terrorism, depending on where you stand. And sometimes there is a change of leadership in certain countries, and as a result of which, the body polity of a country somewhat is affected, and therefore from time to time we would like to be updated and be briefed by your department so that we are better able to make notices of motions, statements, and also to enhance the quality of our debate in the House, and of course our engagement with any other person. To say South African view on this matter is this one. It's important that members must always be educated in those matters. Now, there are those that were put for today. There are few or there are many. We want a briefing on the BRICS Development Bank, also known as the New Development Bank, the Forum for China and Africa, the Indian Ocean Rim Association, and AGOA, but you can start with any of these, not necessarily in the order that I've called them. I am therefore going to defer to the Deputy Minister. I'm going to defer to the Deputy Minister to lead the discussions, and then you can then call on your officials to further assist. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for inviting the department. And I think Chairperson is correct. There's so much that is happening in the space of international relations. There's so much that is happening in the department itself, and because of the nature of the department where everybody is always outside the country, I know that the opportunities to be in the portfolio committee are not as frequent as the committee that is sort of working in the country only. So we really appreciate the patience, and when you invite us to present, and we are ever so willing to do that, Chairperson. Today we reporting on the four areas that the Chairperson mentioned. Here we have senior officials that are working in different desks that deals with these areas on everyday basis, and they will be doing the presentation. And because I think we need to start with whichever one to decide to start with. They will be presenting to, and Mr. Malcolmson will be presenting the BRICS, and then I will deal with political questions if there are political questions, as is always the case. If there are administrative questions, we'll, I'm sure, assist each other. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members of the Committee. The first presentation I'll be dealing with is on BRICS, particularly around the advent of the New Development Bank and the African Regional Centre. I'll be going slightly wider than we just did the NDB, because I believe our involvement in BRICS and how we would like to utilise BRICS to address our domestic challenges is slightly wider than just the NDB. I do see that everyone has the document, so what I intend to do, the first few slides in the fact that you have, I'll be skipping, because you do have the documents, and I believe you have had briefings on BRICS before. But I'll just preface by saying that there are basically four key priorities that we'll be pursuing in the coming financial year for BRICS. The first is the continuing operationalization and implementation of the BRICS New Development Bank and the African Regional Centre. Secondly, the work around the strategy for BRICS Economic Partnership. Thirdly, the priorities put forward by the current chair of BRICS India, and how we interact with those. And then the fourth area is the preparations we are undergoing as South Africa looks forward to 2080, when we will be the chair of BRICS and we will be hosting the summit. So I'll be skipping the first slide, the rationale and global dimension, the second slide on the global dimension. I'd like to start with the next slide, rationale for BRICS engagement, regional dimension, because I believe this slide is at the crux of the matter of why BRICS is important to us. And I believe it speaks to how we will use BRICS to promote the connectivity and infrastructure development, the industrialization, the inter-African trade, and importantly, how we're going to change the skewed, imperfect infrastructure landscape that we inherited, that was built to serve a colonial objective. What I mean by that is most of the infrastructure put in place by the colonial authorities was purely to get resources from the mining areas to the coast and to enter the colonial powers. Whereas the plans we have in place at the level of the African Union, NECAD, SADC, and nationally, is to see how we can support inland economic activity to link economic hubs in the country and continentally, and using infrastructure to promote inter-African trade. So that's why this slide is pretty important. Of course, linked to those are supporting issues around procurement, skills development, technology transfer, employment creation, and so on. The AU NEDAD has the Program for Infrastructure Development in Africa. That's supported by the Presidential Infrastructure Champion Initiative, which is chaired by President Zuma. And then the North-South Corridor is the particular project that the President champions within the PICI. And then the President of the Bank, President Kamas, visited in December. He was particularly excited to hear some of the things around the North-South Corridor. And he said he would begin thinking how the bank could be used to support projects along the North-South Corridor. The President initiated a dialogue process in 2015 when he hosted a summit in Durban, where we arranged for African leaders to interact with the BRICS leaders. And the BRICS leaders undertook after that interaction that BRICS would be used to support African industrialization and infrastructure development. So that's the critical element of why the NDB then becomes an important instrument in helping us achieve that commitment. On the next slide, the second bullet, again, BRICS is important to us because we face similar developmental challenges, and working together we can come up with solutions to address those challenges. We can share policy advice, exchange best practice in meeting the development challenges over and above the work that we're doing in BRICS to address the global agenda, how to reform the global agenda and the global international architecture. Also, of course, BRICS partners are key trading partners of South Africa. They're key investment partners of South Africa, and this helps us facilitate our domestic objectives regarding trade, investment, beneficiation, industrialization, and job creation, because we operate with the BRICS partners both collectively and individually. So with China, for example, we have our bilateral program, we have the program under BRICS, the program under FOCAC, the work we do with them in G20, and so on and so forth. So all of these things are interlinked and are in synergy with each other, what we want to achieve. There's three major strategies that guide how we engage with BRICS. The first being our national BRICS strategy. The second being the strategy for BRICS Economic Partnership that was adopted at the UFA Summit last year. And the third is something that came out of the BRICS think tank process, which was tabled in 2015, a long-term strategy for BRICS. In terms of the national BRICS strategy, of course it's been developed based on addressing the triple challenges of poverty, inequality, and job creation. And also it has the element of seeking partnerships for social development. As we move forward with BRICS, we're helping to develop second and third tier government cooperation initiatives, and we have what's called the Track 3 engagements to involve civil society, academia, business, and trade unions. A key part of work this year in terms of the National BRICS Strategy, which was adopted in 2012, is as we move to 2018 and our next round of chairing, is we've begun a process of reviewing the BRICS Strategy ahead of chairing in 2018 and seeing what priorities we would like to seek as chair. I think it's important that we provide some continuity as chair, going back particularly to what we achieved in 2013 when we last chaired, as well as carrying forward some of the important work achieved under the subsequent chairs, including around the New Development Bank and the African Regional Center, but then also looking for any areas of innovation and initiative. In terms of the strategy for BRICS Economic Partnership, the eight priority areas for cooperation are listed there, and they clearly have linkages with what we want to achieve as a country and in the continent. The key work that will be undertaken this year is that it's expected that each country should identify two sectors as part of the economic partnership that they would lead working groups on. So we would have to take this, of course, to our structures, the IDC, SOC, and the IMC. But initially, I think we're going to suggest looking at connectivity in respect of infrastructure and the issue of processing of minerals. And then I mentioned the long-term strategy for BRICS. We've outlined there the pillars that are part of that. In terms of the evolving architecture, of course, the New Development Bank has now come into being and was formally opened in Shanghai and China in July last year. And we've always said that we would be concurrently working to establish the African Regional Center of the Bank in South Africa at the same time that there would be the work to open the headquarters in Shanghai. That work has been ongoing. There's much work that's been done within our structures and also with the assistance of National Treasury, a key stakeholder, in terms of preparing the ground for opening the African Regional Center in South Africa. A temporary domicile has been identified and work is ongoing to sort out the permanent domicile for the African Regional Center. But the IMC has said that it should be utilized to help us as a nodal point in the development of a development hub or a development node in Gauteng, which is why with the assistance of DPW, the City of Johannesburg, the Gauteng province, we're looking at NASDAQ as an area for that. South Africa will be an equal shareholder in the bank as well as a borrower, and we play an active and equal role in the management and leadership of the bank. As I mentioned, India has made some proposals going forward for their chairing this year, amongst which is to create three new institutions, an agricultural research center, a railway research center, and a new development bank institute. In particular, we would be interested in the institute. The inner South Africa would be hosting the institute alongside the African Regional Center to ensure that the work of the institute doesn't collide and clash with the work of the regional center. Or we would also be looking within the concept of the agricultural research center. There's the idea of having five schools, and there's one school in particular relating to animal sciences that we believe may be worth going for South Africa's purposes. And there's various other initiatives that the Indians have listed, including a big state fair that DTI would be preparing for. In terms of the NDB addressing our domestic challenges, as I said earlier, the president of the bank visited South Africa at the beginning of September, and there are a few key elements that he highlighted. The first being that the first tranche of projects would likely be announced and would commence in April of this year. And I'll deal with it later, but South Africa has submitted project proposals in that regard. The other point he made, which is a very interesting point to that, because people always focus on the interest rates that are linked to the loans. Whereas he was saying that the actual challenge when it comes to loan payments and the increase in the loan payments is that it's more affected by the currency fluctuations. So our minister in particular will be promoting the notion of undertaking financial transactions in BRICS currencies with her counterparts. And the president of the bank is amenable to that, looking at how he can raise loans in local currency to lessen the burden imposed by the currency fluctuation. The NDB and ARC will be used to address the financing constraints and the weakness around project preparation that we've experienced all along in the process of infrastructure development. And in particular, the African Regional Centre will focus on project preparation. That's always been a weakness in how we prepare bankable projects that would be attractive to investors, is that critical phase of project preparation to bankability. He also emphasized that the NDB will be used to shorten the project approval cycle from the traditional 2.5 years to 6 months. And if we look at how quickly the NDB itself has been operationalized, it's clear that the bank needs business and moves much faster. The other area that he emphasized was he wanted the bank to move away from the traditional concepts around donors and recipients and to focus more on listening to the borrower. So it would be a borrower-driven process, and the lending would be done according to the needs of the borrower. The ongoing work in this regard with regard to the African Regional Centre is that the initially it would start with a slightly limited mandate scope and size in accordance with what we originally conceived. So the President has agreed that with the participation of all five members, over time the mandate will be expanded from purely project preparation to elements that we originally envisaged, such as it being a regional centre of excellence for project management, financial excellence and so on. It would also expand in the physical size of the members. It will start with five members. And then the other area of concern is that it hasn't got a dedicated budget line from the bank. So we believe that that should be dealt with. The host country agreement is another thing that we would have to finalize between South Africa and the bank. The host country agreement between China and the bank will be signed on 27th of this month. So the groundwork has been done in that regard that we can build on. The two slides on growth projections are passed. Then, Chair, there were a couple of areas where, you know, we keep getting questions and we thought we might want to bring them to this committee just to report on. The first area is what some people call quotas. There's not a physically set quota per country, but there's an understanding that there will be representativity from all five members of the direct membership when it comes to filling the posts in the bank and in the African Regional Centre. That would be balanced against the need for professionally qualified people, but again, it could also be balanced on issues of equity and gender. So currently we have two officials seconded to the bank in Shanghai, and they are placed in strategic positions in the office of the president of the bank. Advocate Warika particularly is the legal counsel to the president and has an interim responsibility serving as secretary of the Board of Governors and Board of Directors. And Ambassador Magwabani is involved on the international relations side of the bank. There will be a process of advertising and recruiting 100 professionals during the course of this year, And there's a recruitment company that's been hired by the bank to do the bulk of this work. The process will start with the formal recruitment process for the senior managers, which our vice president of the bank, Lady Margot, informs us will start next week, which will then go into a series of recommended candidates undergoing interviews, and their recommendations will be sent to the board of directors for the senior positions, at which time the board of directors would ratify those recommendations. In terms of the priority project I mentioned earlier, we have submitted 4 project proposals to the bank in November. The president examined the details of these projects when he was here, and he then also sent a technical due diligence team to look at the details of those projects. 3 of the projects are South Africa projects, and 1 of them is an Africa project. There's an electricity transmission project, a water pipeline project, and a water capacity project under the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, increasing the water flow to South Africa. Those are the 3 South African projects. And then the 4th project, the Grand Inca Hydro Scheme, is the AUNICAD project that's been submitted. That being the first tranche, there will obviously be subsequent tranches, and the work is ongoing, particularly led by the Economic Cluster and Minister Patel of EDD, in terms of identifying projects for those next tranches. But what the bank hopes to announce very shortly in April, as I said, is that they would want to support 8 projects from each of the 5 countries. So we expect that 1 of those 4 projects will be selected for funding as of April of this year. 2 of the projects the bank, after due diligence, have informed us would be better financed in 2017, and the Grand Inga project, they say, would need more work with other partners, but it would be a more ongoing, long-term project. So we wait for the decision of the board then as to which of the 4 projects we've submitted would be taken forward. I think that the critical point around the project is that they're designed to have the greatest impact in terms of the provision of basic services, job creation, skills development, procurement, domestic procurement, infrastructure development, especially in the energy sector and the water sector. The last question we deal with, Chair, is that we often get asked about the linkages and the roadmap on trade and investment cooperation and linkages to things like Operation Paquita. And in the negotiation of the strategy for the Big Economic Partnership, South African negotiators made certain that there would be references to the key sectors and the key areas of development that are part of our NDP, the 9-point action plan, and in particular Operation Paquita, with references, for example, to investments in energy projects, oil and gas exploration, energy infrastructure, and so on. And as I said, going forward, Minister Patel particularly would be leading on finalizing project proposals under the rubric of developing the BRICS strategy for economic partnership, where it's required that you have a roadmap of detailed projects to support the aims and objectives of the partnership. And I think I'll end there on the BRICS chair.
Yes, we will take 2 topics that the Deputy Minister. We can take this one and put in for her. And then we'll allow members to engage, and then we'll take the last 2. If we take the whole 4, it will be difficult to manage discussions. The next one can follow. For her.
Thank you, Anthony.
Then the name doesn't sound well, but let's welcome Honorable Duffman, Honorable Lekoda, and then Mukhalapa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. On the issue of the China-Africa summit that was held in Johannesburg in December, as I'm sure members, honourable members are aware, which was held at the beginning of December in South Africa under the theme Africa-China Progressing Together, Win-Win Cooperation for Common Development. It was co-chaired by our President, His Excellency President Zuma, and President Xi Jinping from China, and 48 heads of state and government from the African Union and the African Conference attended. In terms of the main outcomes, there were 2 major outcome documents. There was the Johannesburg Declaration, which is a more political document that sets the framework for partnership on a political level. And there's a more detailed, concrete implementation plan, or plan of action, that covered a 3-year period for 2016 to 2018. the significant development that occurred at the summit was that the Tokyo partnership was upgraded to what is called the new level of comprehensive strategic partnership. So it has a completely new level of strategic importance to both Africa and China. And I think that is reflected then in the 10 new measures that were announced by President Xi Jinping during the summit. And these 10 new measures are to be implemented in 2016 to 2018. What we made sure when we were negotiating the documents was that those measures that were agreed with the Chinese and announced by President Xi would address the three key bottlenecks hampering Africa's development, namely inadequate infrastructure, lack of professional and skilled personnel, and funding shortages. And if I could briefly just detail the 10 areas, there's the China-Africa Industrialization Plan, a China-Africa Agricultural Modernization Plan, a China-Africa Infrastructure Plan, a China-Africa Financial Plan, the China-Africa Green Development Plan, the China-Africa Trade and Investment Facilitation Plan, the China-Africa Poverty Reduction Plan, the China-Africa Public Health Plan, the China-Africa Cultural and People-to-People Plan, and the China-Africa Peace and Security Plan. And within each of those plans, he announced some detailed figures in terms of the number of people that would be trained, the number of scholarships that would be afforded, the number of training opportunities that would ensue, and so on and so forth. The key element was that linked to the actual plans, he announced a financing package of $60 billion, which is broken down into $5 billion in grants, $35 billion in concessional loans and export credits, $5 billion that would be for the Africa Development Fund and for the special loan for the development of Africa, and $10 billion for the China Africa Fund for production capacity cooperation. So I think those are very significant announcements on the side of China that responded to what we as the chair on the African side had asked the Chinese to do, which was to help us to support the implementation of Agenda 2063, to support the implementation of the various programmatic elements under NEPAD, such as CEDA, the PRCI, TIDIC, which is the agricultural program, and so on. And then developed from the work we had done bilaterally with China in terms of agreeing on a comprehensive strategic partnership, as well as the 5 to 10 year implementation plan, there were certain breakthroughs we have made there in terms of convincing the Chinese about arguments of beneficiation at source, of helping Africa with its industrialization and developing its manufacturing capacity, opening up its markets more for trade and agro-processing, for agro-processed products and so on, that we then carried forward into the COPAC outcome. Consciously, as chair, we were representing Africa and we made sure that the elements of the Agenda 2063 and so on were there, but we also made sure that COPAC could be used to respond to the primary challenges addressed in the NDP. The Chinese have something called the four principles and six areas of focus. The four principles are sincerity and equality, solidarity and mutual trust, inclusive development and innovation. The six areas of focus is industry, finance, poverty reduction, ecological protection, people-to-people cooperation, and peace and security. COPAC has a hybrid nature. It has both bilateral and multilateral elements. So in the implementation of COPAC, you will see a lot of implementation happening on the bilateral level, China with South Africa, for example, and any of the other African countries that are members of COPAC. But also we continually emphasize to the Chinese that they need to assist us with the regional multi-country cross-border project, which they've now agreed to. It's been a long battle over the years of COPAC to get them to agree to this, but they have agreed now. And we've seen that they've adopted an MOU of cooperation with the African Union and have agreed to work with the African Union, the NEPAD agency, and some elect secretariats like SADC in seeing how to support the implementation of these cross-border projects. I made reference earlier to, you know, there are these linkages then between the bilateral processes and the COPAC process. So it's significant that during the state visit the day before the summit, there was an announcement of various deals and agreements between China and South Africa to the value of 96 billion rand, which again responds to our priorities around industrialization, beneficiation at source, job creation, skills development and training and so on. The 5 to 10 year strategic program for cooperation also make sure that these elements are part and parcel of what we do with China as a country, in terms of investments in human resources, infrastructure, and then particularly cooperation around Operation Patis and the ocean economy. Minister Molewa has signed an MOU of cooperation with China where they will support Operation Pakita. And we see that coming through later when we deal with IORA, the Indian Ocean Rim Association, the support that China is putting then through the IORA in terms of Operation Pakita. The way forward, Chair, is obviously we have these plans now, the 10 plans, we have these finance package, but the devil is always in the details. So the work that's being undergone now and will be taken forward to the RNC and to Cabinet is exactly as South Africa. How do we access these funds? How do we access these plans and programs? What terms will be coming with those loans, those grants? Are they terms that we need or can live with? What are the criteria for projects and so on and so forth? What are the implementation modalities? I mean, there's certainly areas where we will push for implementation at a static level and at an AU level, but there certainly are areas where we should be pushing in South Africa to ensure maximum benefits is derived from the relationship with China in terms of supporting our own national objectives and the key issues that have been identified, including the 9-point plan. So that will be the process that will culminate in recommendations to Cabinet. Ultimately, though, the summit was regarded as a huge success by both the visiting African delegations and the Chinese side. And a particular thing that many countries on the African side focused on was it was the first time that it was really a summit based on partnership, where the agenda, the outcomes documents hadn't just been drafted by China and given to Africa. It was the first time that the chair on the African side actually took the initiative to draft the first set of documents. So the zero draft was drafted by South Africa. It then went to China, and then in a series of back-and-fro negotiations involving the Chinese, as well as the PRC in Addis Ababa and the African Ambassador Group in Beijing, we were able to come up with the final document that emerged out of the summit, as well as what was contained in President Xi's speech. So that was a very significant development, where South Africa showed its ability to push what SWCAC is supposed to be all about, which is equality, mutual respect, and mutual benefit. And I think we achieved that. So the ongoing work is now to see how we can use SWCAC to serve our own socio-economic development needs and to look at these various plans to see how we can put forward projects for beneficiation, manufacturing, infrastructure development, and so on.
Thank you very much. I am now going to invite the comments and questions. Back to the chair so that I can see Honorable Shop and Edwin. I have been for that night.
Yeah, I have to go.
Okay, member. Mukhalapa? Honorable Mukhalapa, you are on the floor. You are followed by Khatebe and Dolo and Kalia.
Thank you very much, Chair. Apology for being late. Chair, let me welcome the presentation. I think they are food for thought. On the BRICS one, there's always this notion that the other four BRICS partners know why they are in BRICS, and seem not to know why are we in BRICS. And I think as we move along the architecture of this organization, we have to find ourselves. I see somewhere, page 7, when it says BRICS strategies, the first Roman figure there, it says South Africa's national BRICS strategy, classified top secret. I just want to find out, because for me, it's a question of national interest. And this is one thing that I always say. What is our national interest when it comes to BRICS? And I see here it says TIFA is certified, classified as top secret. Does it mean it is our national interest? What are our national interests in BRICS? The following one, which seems to be a contradiction to the first one, in page 8, which says national BRICS strategy, it says identified as addressing poverty and inequality. That is the question that I ask. Why are we in BRICS? For poverty and inequality and triple challenges, or for this top secret national interest that we don't know what it is? Can we get the clarity of what is our national interest when it comes to BRICS? And I see the difference between FOCAC and BRICS is that in FOCAC we are making reference to the NDP, but I don't see any single reference to the NDP when it comes to BRICS. Why is it so? Or maybe it might mean that the NDP has been disintegrated into smaller pieces without specific reference to the NDP. But in FOCAC, we put on the NDP, but when it comes to the BRICS, we don't focus on the NDP. But the main essence of it is, what is our national interest in BRICS? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Khatere.
Thank you, Jefferson. First of all, I'd like to appreciate the both presentations which we made this morning. The question which I'm going to raise, Chair, concerning the one that brings the issue of the new development bank, how does it compare with the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank development? Because what I see in both banks is that it looks like the AWIB is very open.
Yeah.
It could have already been invited to join the country, to join. And then this one, it looks like a closed shop, a closed club.
Yeah.
Why that difference? Because we thought that if it is brought up, there will be more there to deal with this thing. Because the way it is now, it looks like the NDP is going to depend a lot, not on the reserves of China, but when you look at the reserves of China, the current reserve of China, is that there were times when it was around $4 trillion. Now it has gone down to about 3. So with this commitment, they'll clear water. So why not broaden up the base of the new development bank but also keeping the key and happy food who are part of that? And then on the issue of focus, I think what must be appreciated is the approach which South Africa has taken, that of involving the entire AU on this project, so that they can, because we cannot rise alone. We cannot rise alone because by the effect that we've got this migration from the north to the south is because Africa is seen as the advanced country within the continent. But with this type of focus resolutions coming out of that, what is really highly appreciated is what the President of the Republic has done. Open up for the African continent and then deal with the continental project. But what I'm worried with here is the issue of the Grand Inga then. That project has been in the pattern for more than 100 years. It's for more than 100 years. I can see now, even under FOCAC, it is still being shifted a little bit backwards. And then we know that part of defining Africa, it was defined as a dark continent. I think that the Grand Inga Dam is going to give us a project, going to give us a chance, whereby we're also going to become now the really enlightened continent. So why shift it? Because I would have taken that as priority because it's been there for so many years. Even after South Africa has committed to the democracy project, I thought that it would be a priority because I think that energy is the one which can drive industry. We can have good industrialization policies, but if energy is not there, there'll remain a factory. So why put that? I would have thought that it would be number one. Thank you, Chair.
I wanted to say to congratulate the department on the good work that they've done, particularly regarding negotiations with China and the association with them. But what I want to find out, I just want more clarification on the North-South corridor plan, some kind of detail. And the involvement of other countries, are they, is it going from country to country, and so on. Secondly, I just want to know, is there some kind of interest rate that is pushed in? If so, how much?
Thank you. Honorable Khalil. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think I need a BRICS 101 after this presentation. I would just like to know, if you said the devil lies in details, you refer to a board of trustees. Now, who sits on that board? I know that there's vice presidents and there's a president and there's a rotational chair of it. But the board is composed of who? Is there equity amongst all the partners? Then the second thing, you say that 100 positions have been advertised. Now, are these basically to do with running the bank, or is it to run with the project? You know, would it be like senior management of a project manager, or would it be, what, you know, I think we need some detail on that. You refer in your presentation on forecast that 96 billion rand has been pledged. Is that the equivalent of the 60 billion US dollars? Your presentation is 60 billion US dollars. You refer to 96 billion rand. And are these all specific projects allocated to specific projects, or is it there now and whoever wants to use it? For example, you know, you talk of a parliamentary forum. Has that been established? You talk of partnerships, I'm going back to the BRICSA. You talk of a parliamentary forum, you talk of a civic organization forum. My concern is that we have these plans in place, but we as South Africa have not clarified in our own minds and our own signing of the deals. But it's going ahead with other partners, and we seem to be a step behind. So maybe some comment on that.
Thank you.
The absence of further heads, let me just open my own questions and comments. Now, on break, I want to congratulate both government and the department on our membership of BRICS and the mandate that it will attend to. However, I have one or two questions. Given that in the earlier presentation, Mr. Malmsen correctly indicated that the IMF as well as the World Bank, after their death, mainly funded infrastructure that kept colonial trade relations between the Western powers and Africa. What specific project is the BRICS Bank going to fund? And what conditionalities, if any, are they going to attach to that? And you see, there were certain conditionalities that were imposed by the World Bank, the IMF, that changed the political economy of the borrowing countries, particularly in Africa. But if, for instance, the NBB does not do that completely, then somewhere in Africa or even in South Africa, you may see a phenomenon where additional funds are shifted to do other pressing needs. For instance, you give the country to build a dam or to build roads or to build airports, then they give that money for wages. We've seen that kind of thing with some of our municipalities in South Africa. So, strict monitoring conditionalities that if this money is meant for that, it must be meant for that. Is there any conditionality for something like that? And there is a problem or an observation that South Africa participates in many international forums, but it does not employ people. This is we talk about that in the foreign missions and 126 missions, but it's not for that for now. China-Africa Forum, BRICS, are we training people
who can speak the languages of the countries we are interacting with and deploying at both management through leadership level and at admin level. Because you see, if you participate in a franchise, you don't know what is happening. And you are putting in a lot of money, you lose out all the time. There's something that I did not understand well when that's on page 8, Mr. Malcolm said. We are saying that South African national trade strategy identifies addressing poverty and inequality. You see that on page 8. But earlier on in your input, you actually said the mandate of BRICS is infrastructure development and support for industrialization. Now, I know that industrialization and infrastructure development will result in addressing unemployment and therefore inequalities. But when you factor this in as a strategy for BRICS, unless you are saying in the African context, but even then, I thought the main mandate should remain infrastructure and should remain industrialization. Then the rest will result according to the context of each country. Any clarification there? Then these two words, this page 5, PIDA and PIDI. We are saying that PIDA is for the Continental Infrastructure Program, the Program for Infrastructure Development in Africa, PIDA, and a Presidential Infrastructure Champion Initiative. Who is who between these two? And who is BRICS going to prefer to fund? Because both are in the continent, and both are for infrastructure. Is there a different infrastructure for PIDI and a different infrastructure for PIDA? I think our leaders should decide if they are overlapping or they are not overlapping, so that the funds are not going to trip each other. Well, my own view, just to indicate what Mokhala was saying, and I think the observation that was made by the minister is very apt on page 3, that the world we live in, just looking at the position, the world we live in today has changed significantly since the end of the Cold War. A new group of economically influential countries, such as Brazil, Russia, India, China, are on the ascendancy and are reneging the concept of political and economic power in the global system. South Africa membership of BRICS should be located within the context. I think there have always been groupings for economic interest, sometimes geostrategic interest, and each country must situate itself somewhere. Either it is a member of a particular grouping for military protection, or for economic self-sustenance, something like that. So I personally see it in that context. Now, on scorecard, really I was going to ask, what is in the name? Is it an accident that big countries name this summit CEPA after themselves? You know, you remember the Berlin Conference, 1884, 1885. It was about Africa, it was a Berlin Conference, so that history could capture it that way. Fast forward, the U.S. Africa Leadership Summit. Remember that? So more about Africa. Now, Forum for China and Africa Cooperation. And even in the other page, somewhere it says Africa-China. Them together a win-win situation. But the name doesn't say that. The name starts with China. And these are not the only ones. There are two others. I think the other one is about India. It says India, Africa, something, and it's about the the involvement of India in the African continent. The paper even does that, the subtle contest dominance for trade in Africa between India and China. But again, that standing is named, it's called India. I don't know whether we in the leadership of Africa should not resist certain things. I mean, because you see, the fact that I was given a name, Moses, as my school name. I think I'm just called a Christian name. But I'm a man of people who was not a great time. So I must answer to something. Now we answer to China and U.S. leadership summit. So I don't know if there's anything you want to say, but...
Yeah, the land on this one.
I didn't see
exactly what specific projects is this money going to support in South Africa? Well, the cabinet, yeah, Imalia focus. Because the document says it will support the MVP. It then talks about the 9-point plan. And then it talks about Operation Pakistan.
For me, it's not focused. I would have thought that cabinet will say, focus, from focus we get this money, and here are the specific areas where the BRICS money will not affect, but will affect the specific one and the following one. Now, if it's MPP 9-point plan operation package, it's all of the things, it will then include the IORA, all of the things. Can you win that? Allowed. Yes. Any other thing? Just to answer again, then let's see you the next
package. Just last one. The reference to the projects, the four projects.
Can you share what those four projects are? That
on POCAC?
No, on BRICS.
Okay. Did you hear that? Thank you, Mahalama.
You want to come back?
Yeah. This is on the fourth page, on the last page. 10 new measures. The last one. 10 new measures need to be contextualized. I think I missed the 10 points. Or it can be provided because it's not in the document.
Yeah.
What do
you call it?
No, thank you very much, listen, I think Mr. Malcolmson would answer technical questions, then you measure them and that. And I'm sure other senior leadership would officials will join in answering. I think let me start with Chair's question. Firstly, I think you are right when you, respond to what Mr. Mukharapa was raising around what is our national interest in BRICS. It is really captured in what the minister is saying. It's an alternative, and as you know, that I think the chairperson put it nicely, that when we form partnership with different countries, there are different things you're looking at, including the relationship when it comes to global forums, multilaterals. Do you share same interest in other things? Do you have a history on policy agreements? But I think more importantly, this was a question of looking at emerging economies and what are the alternatives globally to IMF and World Bank. You would know that we were not only South Africa, the whole world in fact, the developing world, were borrowers with such conditions that in most cases by being that borrower, you end up with a situation that your country never developed except for repaying that loan forever. Now here in BRICS, definitely we're acting as both, as the presentation is saying, we're acting as both the shareholder and the borrower. We will be part of those people who determine what are the conditions. And surely, if there are conditions that are set, those would be progressive conditions of making sure that you use the money for what it's borrowed for, not for something else. But conditions that would make countries prosper if they borrow money for particular projects. So we definitely, South Africa's interest in BRICS is looking at an alternative way of doing things, which is, I mean, if you look at the Security Council and other part of our members in BRICS are part of the Security Council, and we're looking at that as a country, they would assist in forums where we want a partner that would help us veto a particular decision, that would help a great deal. So, you know, that is more for us, that is more than just saying, you know, we need to count projects, we need to count practical things that will benefit from BRICS, from our involvement in BRICS. We benefit taking into account that we're part of the global community, and therefore being part of the progressive movement or whatever have benefits to the country. So that's and it answered that first question. Then there's, I think, the question of project would be answered by Mr. Malcolmson, but I can say in we saying for both FOCAC and BRICS, which I think is something that is work in progress in DTI and other departments, we're saying we have a plan, a national development plan, and the programs that are prioritized in the, for a country, and programs that will address the different challenges that we are facing. So wherever, whether it's BRICS or FOCAC, definitely, yes, there need to be concrete programs that will be funded out of the 10 billion in particular that we are given as South Africa from FOCAC. But there are other programs within that that would be funded by BRICS. And there might be others that we know already, but I know we've been talking about, we need to, speaking to DTI in particular, to be concrete about these two or these three are the programs that, or projects that, in addition to infrastructure, projects that are going to be funded by either FOCAC or BRICS. We know also with FOCAC, with BRICS rather, because FOCAC, you would know that it's the whole of the continent of BRICS. We, as South Africa, who's the member of BRICS, we also represent the continent. And therefore, I think it was one of the Hadel who was talking about the Van Ingaden. You're right, maybe it should be the priority in the development bank. I'm sure it's because of some that assessment that was done, maybe there were shortcomings. But because we're representing Africa there, we should have a significant program, because they're not in necessarily in banks, they're in BRICS to us as South Africa. We should have a project that will be some kind of an indication that the whole continent benefit from that particular bank, because it's not, when we were sort of motivating for that, we were saying we are a gateway to Africa and therefore we need to host that kind of a bank. And I'm sure it can happen. I think let me stop there at the moment and allow Mr. Marums to, while I'm looking at other questions. Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair. The Minister, I believe, has taken some of the earlier questions, but there was the question about whether, in comparison with the AIIB, which is a closed club or not, the New Development Bank is a closed club. It will not be a closed club going forward. But there was a decision taken that in getting the New Development Bank up and running, it should be concretized by the five first. So in terms of the physical location of the bank, getting it up and running, which started in July last year, the initial capitalization, the initial identification of projects, the initial staffing and so on should all be by the five. But the President confirmed, and the Vice President from the Chinese Vice President, who was here a week ago, confirmed that downstream interested countries, interested parties would be invited to become shareholders. But on understanding that the five initiating members would never have less than 50% of the shareholding of the New Development Bank. So the downstream of it will open up to interested countries and financing institutions. In terms of the issue around the Grand Inga Dam, just to say indeed, it's a project that's been around for a long time. But it was really with the advent of NEPAD that Inga was pushed to the forefront. And it was NEPAD that made argument as to the absolute necessity of the Grand Inga Dam project in meeting our continental and regional energy needs. The other significant development was a couple of years ago where South Africa signed the MOU with the DRC, where we guaranteed the offtake from the project. But I don't think I was saying that it's off the table. But I was saying we've submitted four projects. One of the projects had to be identified for funding now in April. But I think what the bank is saying in their assessment of the four projects, Grand Inga is a massive undertaking. It's huge in terms of what needs to be done and in terms of the capitalization of the project. It could cost anything in the region of about $2.6 billion. So that's not something they can announce they're going to fund in April. So all they're saying is there's a lot more work that needs to be done. They also need to assess what's being done currently, because there's work that's currently being done with South African companies, Chinese companies, other companies on the continent. There's also the issues of which part of the project. It's got many parts. There's the part around transmission lines. There's the part around the physical building of the infrastructure of the dam, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just about groundwork and sequencing what you do, when, how, with who, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not to say it's off the table. But it's just not something they can announce funding for in April of this year. In terms of the question around the North-South Corridor, just to say that this is the project that President Zuma chairs as part of the Presidential Infrastructure Champion Initiative. He champions the North-South Corridor. There has been work going on for some time in this regard. There's an IMC led by Minister Halebe to support the President in this, and there's the technical support structures amongst the directors. There's a Directors General Steering Committee, and there's an official set of structures that support implementation of these projects. Basically, it's about identifying where are the strategic choke points and missing links along the North-South Corridor, and then bringing political weight to bear strategically to unblock those things. And it involves hard and soft infrastructure. So, for example, there's a lot of work going on in terms of finalizing the one-stop border post at Bike Ridge. There has been successes with one-stop border posts on other parts of the corridor, but there's a particular problem around Bike Ridge, which they're resolving. there had been instrumentation already along the corridor. Egypt has built the remainder of the road to the Sudanese border. There's work that's going on in Kenya and Tanzania, the Dar es Salaam port project. So all along the corridor, there are things that are happening, just to give you that assurance. But for us, it's a process led by Minister Khadebe, and we then report back to the continental structures, the NEPAD head of state and government, on how we championing that implementation. In terms of the issues of the equity, there's equal shareholding amongst the five members of the bank. Just to clarify, there's two boards we're talking about. There's a board of governors, where our Minister of Finance sits, and there's a board of directors, where Mr. Ngweni sits. And the alternate member from South Africa is the DDG from National Treasury, Makoshi. The board of directors is involved with the more operational side of things, and the board of governors is more on the policy side. The 100 positions I refer to is to staff the bank in the various arms of the bank. So, for example, and again reflecting the equity, there's the president of India. He needs staff members in his office. We currently have two of our secondees in his office. China is the chief operations officer. South Africa is the chief financial officer, Leslie Marsdorp. The chief risk officer is Brazil, and the chief administration officer is Russia. So those vice president positions are shared amongst the five member states. These 100 positions are the positions that now fall under the vice president. First the directors general, and then the various ranks underneath that. What we're doing through the IMC is working to identify strategic positions amongst those 100 where we would want to put South African competent, qualified South Africans forward to fill strategic positions amongst those 100 positions. Just to clarify around the issue of the 96 billion rand as opposed to $60 billion, the 96 billion rand is the amount that was signed bilaterally in various agreements, MOUs and deals that were signed in the state visit that preceded the FOCA. It's completely different from the $60 billion. The $60 billion is the finance package that the Chinese side announced during FOCA for the FOCA project. In terms of the problem around deploying people to various fora that we participate in, indeed for a long time that was an issue, that we weren't seconding people to key positions, but I think we have tried to address that, the most obvious example being the chairperson of the African Union Commission, and then the various officials that we seconded to ADIS and to the AU Commission to support our chair. There's also, for example, South African who sits as AU ambassador in Brussels. There's various officials that are seconded to the Fed Secretariat. And as I've said, we've got two secondees to the bank, and we're working on identifying other people for strategic positions. But certainly it's an ongoing thing that the department is working on and looking to improve on. To clarify the difference between PILA and PICI, PILA is the overall infrastructure framework for the African Union. And within PILA there's 52 main projects and then a whole host of subsidiary projects to those 52. What the PICI is the heads of state got frustrated with the pace of implementation of continental projects. So they said that we need a strategic political mechanism where heads of state would each take a project and champion that project. And therefore PICI, the projects in PICI come out of PILA. So there's no conflict. All they did was they selected certain key projects out of the PILA block and said, we're going to champion these ones because we think they will have the greatest impact. So there's no contradiction between PILA and PC. PC is a way of giving effect to the implementation of PILA projects.
Sorry, just to that in this continental framework, if we say, for instance, from south to north, does it say, in the South African context, the infrastructure determines the infrastructure with the country specific will be the following: South Africa, that is, how much is roads, that is, rates, etc., etc. Then when it moves into Tanzania, for Tanzania, their betting infrastructure will be that and that and that. Then Dar es Salaam, that and that. But it's, by the way, Dar es Salaam is in Tanzania. In Zambia, it will be that and that. Up to Egypt, such that when it is completed in the next 50 years, it will change the infrastructure landscape. of Africa. In such a way that, for instance, the Trade Church, the Trade Nations that we complain about, we say the colonial power structured it in such a way that it's to fit them. Whether it's the airport, it's the railways, it's the roads. But African countries can't work with them just because there's a big mountain in between, or the harbor, or the airport, I'm sorry. So first, you are Lagos. First, you must go to Paris, then come back to Lagos. Now, things like that must be challenged, must be addressed by this initiative. He is talking about the country-specific infrastructure, in terms of which each president of a country must ensure that there is no deviation. I'm not sure if the question is correct for you or for the minister or whoever, but I would wish it looks at like. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the PDEP, but then particularly under the PRCI, seeks to unpack the sort of broader project proposal. So when it was put on the priority project, that North-South Corridor, there was a process then of unpacking it. What does it mean? What sections of road need to be rehabilitated? What sections of road need to be built from scratch? What constrictions are there to the free flow of goods and services across borders? What links do we need from interior economic development hubs to port regions? All of those questions were dealt with in the North-South Corridor. And then it was broken down into a whole set of projects. Ultimately, the President presented 19 projects to the Nepal Heads of State and Government Committee about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and they selected seven priority projects. Two of the seven were implemented very quickly and another two were added, so it became a set of 9 priority projects that then, you know, go into helping make ultimately the entirety of the road, bridge and port network running along the north side of the continent, the east side of the continent. Initially it was conceived as Durban to Dar es Salaam, but President Zuma said that if you're going to call it an north-south corridor, ultimately it must be Cape Town to Cairo, which is where Edith then came on board with their section of the road and so on. But the initial conception of the North-South Corridor was Durban to Dar es Salaam. Just quickly on the issue of the name coming first, I can assure you, Honourable Chair, that within the context of the African Union, all the partnerships we talk about, we start with Africa. So as far as we're concerned in the AU context, it's an Africa-China partnership, it's an Africa-Arab partnership, it's Africa-US partnership. You'll see that in all the AU documents. And therefore, as you correctly pointed out in the theme, we insisted that it start as Africa-China. That is, again, no accident. It was, we insisted on putting Africa first. I think that the FOCAC, which was adopted in the year 2000, is either an accident of history or just an accident of semantics. Would a FOCAC sound better than FOACC? But certainly, since 2000, we have corrected that. And certainly the references on our side of Africa and members of the African Union, we always put Africa first. We just can't escape that actual acronym, though, but we talk about the Africa-China partnership. The four projects, I can quickly mention the names of the four projects as I was requested. It's an electricity transmission build to connect renewable electricity supply from the independent power producers to the national grid, which is a rolling 10-year transition development plan involving all the provinces. Then there's a Limpopo project, a water pipeline with a capacity to develop 100 million cubic meters per annum, conveying water to the Waterberg area and Lephalale municipality through the Makolo Crocodile Water Augmentation Project. The third one is supply of additional water to Gauteng from the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. And the fourth is the supply of hydroelectricity to the SADC region from the Grand Inga Hydro Scheme, including transmission lines. Those are the four projects. And lastly, the 10 new measures were the new measures I read out earlier that had been announced by President Xi, the various plans, the China-Africa investment plan. The China-Africa development plan and so on and so forth. Correctly, they're not in the presentation, so we will undertake as a department to get those, the full list of the 10 new measures announced by President Xi, two members, honourable members of the committee, and I'm sure with the help of the Secretariat, we'll be able to do that to provide you with the detailed list of those 10 new measures and some of the detail in each of the 10 measures.
And those four and six terms of focus.
Yes.
Let's move towards John. You will.
I'm
making a follow-up.
Yes.
A doctrine, I mean, because we're going to see what the last book.
I'm making a follow-up on the
question. Yeah, I'm
making a follow-up on the question of the rain.
Secondly, I just wanted to put a riot. I just want to find out the reason is here. Generally, among the people. That the China and India have got a problem of overpopulation, and that some of these very good projects are actually a way of sorting out the report. There is, for example, that coupled with the question that people have to learn the Mandarin, you know, the Chinese language. Is it not a way of, I'm not saying it's like that, you know, I once asked an Englishman, what is the common name in Britain, and he said, it used to be James, now it's Patel. You see the old and Latin word says quid e as the Chimeo Chino as Budona for him tis. I fear the Chinese even if they bring him. I'm not sure. I mean the rest is so many to just bring.
I'm not quite sure what honorable member is saying. I think he's trying to say these processes for China and India planning to colonize South Africa or to take over.
Is the journey from that, based on the truth that there is overpopulation in China, that our children must only be one or two, and that is the problem in the space, and it's the same as in India, and that it will indirectly solve their problem if they come to our country. And that's that. But the question is there any way of trying to address that? There is a problem of xenophobia, for example, so we've got a problem now. Now, I'm trying from the social, socio-economic problem that I'm talking about. Is there a way of trying to make sure that the speed of that is not that fast?
Before you answer this, that's one complicated topic. To the extent that I have looked at the evolution of human history, particularly both imperialism and later economic imperialism, which we still have today. Whether you're looking at the Turkish Empire, what did it want outside their own border? You look at the Roman Empire, you look at the then British Empire. Currently, although we don't call it that way, the American economic dominance, which is actually American Empire, without politically taking over the leadership of country, but the economies, they structure the IMF and World Bank structure this way.
Look, we don't have a voice.
They just indicated how much voice China has and America has and other. The point is, they want to champion national self-interest, economically speaking, and therefore the suspicion that the question of what does China want in Africa must be answered by the African leadership. The issue of what interests them, what does India want in Africa, must be answered by them. But if they answer that question, they must still ask, what does America want? Why does this structure occur in the manner that it structures it? What does it want? So in other words, we must hear everybody.
not quite clear, but it's well wisdom. We must be respectful as well. We must say, well, we want to say British colony, some German colony, and how do we deal with the Americans? How do we deal with the Chinese? How do we deal with the Indians? As Africa. I'm not sure if the leadership does discover. Your name is Darinley. My view is that we must learn it. But remember, the British also wanted us to learn English as their subject. And so did the Afghans. And so did the Chinese. So we must understand. So, although you may not be able to answer it now, that caution is quite found, is really quite found. For Africa, of course, not for South Africa.
Yeah.
I think that
No, I think I'm provoked by what you are saying. No, it's not a debate. I was just going to say that since the emergence of capitalism, which is expansive in its nature, nations of the world are in constant competition. As things stand today, whether we like it or not, it's like that. And in fact, as long as capitalism or free market system, whatever word you want to use, countries will compete for space, to do business, to get benefit, maximum benefit for themselves, and kill the system. And whenever it will, the conditions for that to happen like far away in history. At the moment, we have to participate and engage with other nations to ensure that our country manages to access as much for itself and its people, without necessarily undermining others, but ensuring that there is a peaceful balance around the world that allows for this competition to go on in a constructive atmosphere. So indeed, if we see that cooperation with the Indians will give us more advantages than it does with, say, the old West, we will drift that way. And if we see that if we do that with the Argentinians and the Brazilians, it's a movement like that. It's a living process. But we mustn't be afraid of it. We have to understand it and be able to participate in it as constructively as is possible, both for ourselves and others. Thank you.
Chair, I think the question has been answered by both yourself and Honorable Likota. Constructive competition is important. And, you know, the world would always move to countries of the world, will always move where Africa, their numbers, is one of untapped, an economic growth, when just by looking at those numbers. You are right. Each and every country will look at what is it that we will benefit if we are closer to South Africa and the continent. And you are right. We should be saying what is it that will benefit if we are closer to China, India, Russia, Brazil, and other countries. The question of language is, yes, people are complaining. But you know what? Again, the constructive competition. Can we imagine if we can speak as South Africans all the languages of the world, in particular the superpowers? Because it's not only English and French that is a superpower. It also creates opportunities for us, not necessarily opportunities going to Russia or whatever, opportunities here of all those countries knowing if they come as tourists here. We are able to speak all their languages. We create jobs. That in itself, for me, if we learn Mandarin, we learn the Russian language and that, we would be able to create jobs that we want so much by just somebody knowing the language. So I think it's constructive competition.
To the department on AGOA and IORA.
Okay.
Whoever is presenting.
Which one? Okay, we'll start with AGOA chair, and then the last one will be a lot after that.
Okay, cool.
Okay, J.T. Maya will present
thank you, Chair. Honorable Deputy Minister and honorable members, we are going to launch directly into just the snapshots of the bilateral trade relations between ourselves and the U.S. and focus particularly on the relationship around AGOA. We would just like to mention that should this committee wish for us to unpack further our relationship with the U.S., we would be prepared to do so on a future date. Bilateral trade between South Africa and the U.S. by the end of 2014 stood at $141 billion, having increased from $56.1 billion in 2001. South Africa's efforts to the U.S. amounted to 70.3 billion rand in 2014, and U.S. imports into South Africa to 71.4 billion rand in 2014. At that time, South Africa experienced a trade deficit of about 1.1 billion rand, that is 2014. For the period of January to November 2015, South Africa enjoyed a trade surplus of 2.3 billion rand. In 2014, major AGOA and GSP beneficiary sectors were vehicles, minerals and metals, chemicals and agricultural products. If I may just give the full name for GSP, it's a generalized game of preferences. The next slide is just a snapshot of the figures. Then we'll launch into AGOA. AGOA is a unilateral trade preference program signed into law on 18 May 2000 and has been extended a number of times. As I said, it's a unilateral trade arrangement, and the U.S. normally refers to it as a gift to Africa. AGOA was renewed most recently in June 2015 by 10 years. But for the first time, it was renewed with a special provision tied in South Africa called the out-of-cycle review. And this led to South Africa being brought before the Senate for a public hearing to justify why we believe we qualify to still be included in AGOA. Because the popular belief is that we are too advanced, too developed to still be part of AGOA. Following protracted negotiations, South African veterinary efforts and the ILS counterparts successfully resolved the long outstanding sanitary and phytosanitary issues that threatened continued market access of South African agricultural products into the US market. An agreement was signed to this effect on the 7th of January 2016 to admit the free US meat, poultry, pork and beef into South Africa by 15 March 2016. If we could just highlight the benefits of AGOA for South Africa currently, we will understand that there are dividend tariffs that our country is not paying in respect of certain products because we are beneficiaries of AGOA. The total tariff revenue that South African exporters are relieved of paying as a consequence of AGOA is $46.8 million per annum. In rand terms, that amounts to about 2 billion rand. The largest beneficiary of this tariff relief is the automobile industry that gained a benefit of the $2.6 million in 2014, the major beneficiary being BMW and Mercedes-Benz and Ford. And in rent terms, that is plus minus 493 million rand. The second largest beneficiary for the base metal sector that stands to lose $6.2 million of benefits, amounting in rent terms to 94.8 million rand. The third largest sector is the agricultural sector that is relieved of paying duties amounting to $5.7 million. Going to 107,000 tons of citrus. In rent terms, that is 86.3 million rand. The fourth largest sector for the chemical sector that gained $1.1 million towards the sale, and in rent terms, that is 17.9 million rand. South Africa has to date been the world's largest and most diversified non-oil exporter utilizing our preferences. And we are saying this because we are the only country on the continent with a percent of value-added goods. The other major beneficiaries are Angola and Nigeria, but they are only benefiting because of non-oil products. Agua creates over 62,000 jobs in South Africa and 100,000 jobs in the U.S., and this is a fact that is seldom mentioned. In 2014, 21% of South Africa's exports to the U.S. were exported under AGOA, while 16% was under the GSP. In 2014, major AGOA GSP beneficiary sectors, as we already said, were vehicles at 75%, mineral and metals at 12%, chemicals at 2.7%, and agricultural products at 11%. South Africa's exports classified as purely under AGOA, excluding ag preferences, amount to $1.75 billion. While South Africa exported over 23 billion rand worth of vehicles to the U.S. in 2014, supporting 30,000 jobs in the Eastern Cape and Gauteng, particularly in Port Elizabeth in the Eastern Cape. South Africa exported agricultural products worth $175 million, which represents 57% of agricultural exports to the U.S. and 2.1% of South Africa's total exports to the U.S. AGOA has helped support regional integration and to stimulate regional value chains in the automotive and textile sectors. This is because some of the countries around us manufacture some of the automobile parts and also manufacture textiles and finished textile products, which then come to South Africa and are assembled here and exported from here. President Obama gave a notice of suspension to South Africa on the 11th of January 2016, saying that if South Africa does not fully comply with all the agreements that have been reached with a deadline of 15 March 2016 for imports of South African poultry, U.S. poultry into South Africa to ensure continued duty-free South African agricultural exports to the U.S. and the maintenance of current jobs created by AGOA in this sector, then we've already given the numbers. And this suspension would mean that South Africa is no longer able to export agricultural products and other agricultural products in particular to the U.S. duty-free. So we stand to lose those duties. Potential for additional exports of agricultural products to the U.S., which will create additional local jobs, exist. But at the moment, we have just requested market access for beef, lamb, mangoes, lychees, avocados, and stone fruit, and we are awaiting a response from the U.S. A withdrawal of our preferences for South African agricultural sector would potentially affect the $175 million in exports based on 2014 data, representing 2% of South Africa's exports to the U.S. the U.S. is increasingly advocating for a post-Apartheid trade relationship with Africa based on the free trade agreement. The U.S. trade representative will submit a report to Congress by June 2016 regarding future trade relationships between Africa and the U.S. For South Africa, this would mean we have to take into consideration SACU and perhaps negotiate within that context. AGOA eligible countries were encouraged to maximize benefits by effectively utilizing new opportunities offered, develop and implement national strategies on AGOA, develop diversification strategies, and stimulate intra-Africa trade and regional economic integration. The South African government will consult with business and labor before formulating South Africa's position on a future trade dispensation with the U.S. I would like to pause the chair and we'll send you any questions that come our way. Yes.
The next is IR.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The next presentation is on South Africa and the Indian Ocean Rim Association. I'd just like to preface it by saying there's three critical sort of key messages you could take out of our The first is that we are at a critical period in time in the history of AURA, where we've just last year in Padang, Indonesia in October joined the Troika as the Vice Chair, because we'll be taking over the chair of AURA in 2017 to 2019, and with that we're getting into the work of developing a strategy for our period as chair. The second aspect around AURA is that we consciously and explicitly link Operation Paquita to AURA, where we see AURA as a strategic vehicle whereby we can implement some of the key elements of Operation Paquita, or at least get support in the forms of investment and skills and technology for the implementation of Operation Paquita. And the third element is that it involves relatively little input from us as a member. The annual membership fee is $24,000, but for that sort of relatively minimal fee in comparison to other membership fees and so on and so forth, the benefits to the crew are far outweigh the minimal input. The first couple of slides, again, Chair, I'll read through. The first slide just gives an apt representation of the membership. There have been 21 members, and then there's a number of dialogue partners. Germany joined recently as a dialogue partner, and Somalia was the latest member to join in October last year. The policy context is South-South cooperation, economic diplomacy critical to this, and North-South dialogue. In terms of the background, AURA was essentially a South African initiative. It's something that President Mandela pushed for from 1995 onwards until the creation of AURA in 1997. And on that slide 4, we then also give some of the elements around the rationale for why we believe it's important to be doing something in and around and associated with Indian Ocean. In terms of the background, we mentioned the overriding factor of the IORA at the moment, the key priority is the blue ocean economy. And I think the last bullet is a key point in it. It's the one space where you can try and bring together what are often competing interests. Interest to develop resources to address your developmental challenges, which sometimes conflict with issues of the protection of the ocean's biodiversity, and so on and so forth. So it's about bringing together the two imperatives of ensuring development, utilizing the resources, but making sure it's done in a biodiverse, sensitive way and ensuring the long-term sustainability of the ocean. The next slide around our order is that there's definitely a burgeoning strategic interest in the Indian Ocean Rim as well as the blue economy. And we receive a number of inquiries of membership as dialogue partners, and so on and so forth. So there's a clear strategic interest. Once AURA was established in 1997, there was a period when sort of was in the doldrums, pun intended, Chair. And it was only when India came in as chair, followed by Australia, followed now by Indonesia, with the support and the pushing from South Africa, that we've got some traction in AURA, and we've got AURA to focus on some key activities. The most important thing was that they've adopted the Ocean Blue Economy as the overriding priority for Iora. And within that, there's other key sectors that are set forth as priorities: fisheries and aquaculture, renewable ocean energy, seaports and shipping, seabed exploration and minerals, marine biotechnology research and development, and tourism. And there's very clear linkages, obviously, between those and Operation Bakisa. In terms of South Africa in Iora, as I said, our leadership role is growing as we move forward to being the 10-27-2019. As I said earlier, for the limited investment of $24,000 a year, we already have direct benefit from the special fund of Iora, in that $120,000, could we just go to the next slide? I want to double check that that figure has been changed. Yes, okay. So, so that wouldn't be ZAR, that should be dollars. It should be $120,000 has been allocated for two projects driven by South Africa, where we coordinate the Blue Economy Core Group, and the Water Research Commission coordinates the Iora Water Science and Technology Working Group, and the money is allocated to us for driving the work in those two groups. We've also, for example, leveraged Chinese support that we've secured bilaterally and through OCAC to help us drive the Blue Economy Core Group, and they've allocated, for example, $10,000 to have a workshop in China this year on the coast, probably in Shenzhen, to specifically focus on the Chinese example, how China used the opening up and reform process 30 years ago. They focused on the coastal provinces, and they established special economic zones in the coastal provinces, and the whole of China's development subsequently was leveraged off the back of the development of SEZs in the coastal provinces. So there will be a special workshop dedicated to studying that experience and seeing how it could be applied in Africa. We've also managed to ensure, through the Deputy Minister who attended the Blue Ocean Economy Ministerial in Mauritius in September, that Operation Pakisa was explicitly infused into the Iora work, and some of the elements of Pakisa have been taken up as a model for other countries in Iora, but also for our own interest, making sure that there's support for Pakisa projects. Again, as I mentioned in the earlier presentation, there's an MOU that's been negotiated with China to support Operation Pakisa directly. And through Iora, there's other areas, for example, where countries have offered training for seafarers, skills development for seafarers. The UAE specifically has offered investments in some of the infrastructure projects for the ports development and so on. And we've also succeeded through Iora. There's a very important scientific expedition that was launched from Durban in December called Second Indian Ocean Expedition. It's going to be a multi-year, it's a major global scientific program where the ultimate research input will help to inform how we use the Indian Ocean as a resource, concentrating on the sustainable development and biodiversity issues of the Indian Ocean, but now based on actual data and scientific research that they would have picked up over the next couple of years. In terms of our own strategic objectives, moving forward to when we chair, these are suggestions that we'll be taking forward ultimately for the cabinet to approve. But essentially, the strategic objectives we foresee with regard to our Iora is number one around the ocean blue economy and sustainable economic development, where we particularly seek alignment to Operation Bakisa. The second area is maritime peace and security, especially with regard to Africa, and making sure Iora can support the African Union's integrated maritime strategy, Africa Integrated Maritime Strategy. The third element is capacity building and skills development, including research, innovation, technology. Then there's two cross-cutting priority areas: it's gender empowerment across all these sectors of the work of Iora, and linking the African agenda, helping us implement elements of Agenda 2063 and aims where possible. The project, I mentioned earlier some of the direct benefits that are already accruing to South Africa from Iora, but there's projected benefits in the short to medium to long term in terms of supporting our port development projects that would facilitate exports and the idea of being a transshipment hub. There would be the issue of building our capacity for shipbuilding repairs and refurbishment and investments in marine transport and maritime infrastructure. Then there's something I mentioned just now, the skills and capacity building, particularly in the training of seafarers. the elements of investment, direct investment in PAKISA projects, the development of coastal SEZs, technology research and development, the development of aquaculture projects, and then assistance of offshore oil and gas exploration. Those are some of the areas where we think there can be direct benefits going forward. And lastly, Chair, just to mention some of the high-level meetings that are coming up. It's the 20th anniversary of AWRA next year, so the Indonesians have offered to host an AWRA summit in March next year. And then there's the statutory meeting around the Council of Ministers and so on. There's other groups that are part of AWRA, such as there's an academic group, there's a business forum, and there's a working group on trade and investment. Particularly in April this year now in the UAE, there's the second economic and business conference where our Minister of Trade and Industry will be representing South Africa, but we've also asked that the Minister of Small Business Development be invited, Minister Zulu, because of the focus of that meeting in the UAE on SMMEs and new technologies. So there's all these sorts of opportunities where we believe we can leverage off our AWRA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Malcolmson. Well, somewhere they would have called you Malcolm X.
Okay, the two presentations. Of course, you must indicate which one are you engaging with, between Aboa and Iora. Just note your hand, starting with Aboa.
Thank you, Chair President. I think that when you take all the presentations which you made today, you can really see that our government is really at the top of things when coming to the issues of international relations. I think why? Because I can see there's a delicate balance between East and West. We just had BRICS, FOCAC, and now we see AGOA and AWRA. When you can see that there's these interlinkages, that they are putting South Africa first. I think that one must be commended. Must be commended for doing that delicate balance to Lesbos. Excellent. But Chair, when I'll start first with AGOA, again, you know, South Africa is a small country, a small economy. And then for it to be protected, the best form of protection will only come through multilateral institutions. Because when you look at the essence of AGOA, you can see some level of bullying which is coming in there. There's some level of bullying of which after some certain period of time we are going to be in trouble. I'll make an example. When Poultry Association of South Africa spoke about this issue of the quota which should be coming in from America, about 60 million tons of this, they said that basically they'll wipe off the poultry industry of South Africa. So it means that poultry being the cheapest form of protein which you are having, it is going to be very dangerous that you are going to be in that territory. Because it means that the cheapest form of protein will be dependent upon by imports from outside. I think particular regard must really tread very carefully. But I really appreciate that they were the deal. Because it's better to have a deal than not to have a deal. Because you know that what you are working on. But what is most dangerous here, as I said, that our protection will come from the numbers, the number of people who are around us. I can look at this AGOA. As it is said, it is a unilateral decision by America, of which it is controlled by the Congress of America, by an act of Congress. So it means that basically whatever happens here will totally and wholly be dependent upon what is happening in the Congress of America. So that one on its own must be a better. Why do I say that here? Because if you can look at the area or the platform where the trade issues are discussed, which is the World Trade Organization. And then when you look at the issue of America in the Association of World Trade Organization, the go around, which was dealing with agricultural development, they ensure that it is shut down. That's why it is not even, there's not even an agreement even up to this point. So, but at the same time, when they shoot us down, they go and form mega IPAs outside. Outside the WTO. There's a mega IPA between America now sitting in negotiation and European Union. There's a mega IPA between Asian nations and America. So when you look at those mega IPAs and this agreement, this thing starts going to be a grain of sand. It's going to be a grain of sand. So it means that we are going to be neutralized like no other person's business. I think that I really appreciate the situation whereby the government and the department start preparing for that scenario. Because the sooner these things are signed off, and then we're going to be just a grain of sand in the entire picture. But what we also want to say is that...
What is to be a grain of sand?
Okay, when you go to the beach, you've got a lot of sand. A grain
of
sand. One thing. One tiny sand.
Which is better than our colonizers.
So, what is critical here? What is critical the entire issue is that it's the issue of the gift of Africa. Aqua being a gift of Africa. But when you look at the jobs here, the issue that South Africa is not actually didn't get a gift. Actually gave America a gift of 38,000 jobs. When you look at the balance, because see that the Aqua agreement provides 52,000 jobs in South Africa. It provides 100,000 jobs in America. So if that we gave America a gift of 38,000 jobs, that one must be balanced. Thank you.
I don't want to speak up for another person. However, I think I think I agree with him in the sense that but you must not look at the gift of the power. there is an indirect and advantage to Americans. But in terms of the jobs, you are right, we do get some advantage. But then I look at it at the end of the day, in the ownership of it. Because what we do in South Africa, we are actually assembling the European cars, specifically BMW and the assembly boys, as they do in America, I suppose. So to that extent, we're not benefiting much. The problem I'm having, I thought initially I have a problem with the question of the American chicks. Please don't say this in front of the Sundowns, eh? Sundown fans don't like chicks. Is that currently the ordinary South African small businesses do not benefit from the production of chicks. Go to any of these outlets like Kentucky and others. There is a contract there that they must only buy chicken from the rainbow chicken. And the ordinary people in rural areas who are producing this chicken and don't have any marketing. So I think the people are going to suffer the rainbow chicks, which I'm not sure who owns them. But I want to congratulate you for I hope you meet the deadline. I don't think it's a matter of a threat to small businesses. What I wanted to find out is, do we export oil as well as import oil in this country? I always have a problem that our oil, which we produce here, is actually we also buy it in dollars. I sometimes find it strange, but I think that we we import oil as well as export oil, but it's a bit complicated for me. Is the free trade and that we don't pay the duty, is it also retrospective? They also don't pay duties on those checks, that I assume. But anyway, I think as far as the boy is concerned, no, I think let's give it a green light. Let's go. I'm not going to repeat what I said there about India. What is the role of the dialogue partners? What how do they come into the picture, and what is the advantage to us of having them there? With the, that is with Iwara or something, which is a very good water for economy. Coming to the same question, I only hope that we also feel a strategic position in the administration. I only hope so. And if not, can you let me know that that's the plan. And secondly, there is this question of quotas, in particularly in this new world that we've discovered now, that our country is even bigger, so you go right down. And what is the position with the question of quotas? Is it a question of India has got a bigger sea, or Australia has got a bigger sea, and that the position of quotas is in terms of the amount of land, or I mean of sea, that you have and so on. I don't see a boundary between the Atlantic. They said that it's where they meet, Atlantic and Indian Ocean. But I've not seen any boundary. I'm not saying there is none, but I've not seen that. Where do you draw the line? That is more or less, yeah. As far as the quota is concerned. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks for the presentation. Starting with AGOA, I think there are some encouraging and some discouraging aspects with AGOA. It's encouraging to realize that our engagement in AGOA brought us a trade surplus. It's also encouraging to observe that jobs were created both ways, in South Africa and in America. However, when Congress takes a decision that South Africa is a developed country, it needs to be asked what measuring tools they use, because we are here and we know that the economy of South Africa has three economies. The former homeland areas are very deprived. But also in your presentation, when you indicated that if we don't meet the agreements that were made, were they agreements, or were they demands from the other side? Now, with the IOR, I think this is one issue which shows that South Africa is hard at work to become an important player in the global arena. When I look at the map, there are countries which have a dark green color, I suppose those are the members of the IORA. And the light green color, those are the dialogue partners. And the dialogue partners, the members are around the Indian Ocean. The dialogue partners are scattered all over. Now, I want to check, what makes a country to qualify to be a dialogue partner? And as my colleague has already asked, well, what do they stand to benefit as dialogue partners? There are countries also which are rising in rate, which are the least developed countries. So I want to check their status in the association. Are they treated as equal partners, or are they treated in a way that they are preferred to become maybe a given preferential treatment in order to make sure that their development is enhanced? And there is also something which is quite encouraging, the maritime peace and security. I think that's an important aspect, more so that this area of the rim was once very infested with issues like piracy. I think that that aspect is quite encouraging, because we'll have to regard what we benefit from this association. Thank you very much.
Halapa.
Thank you
very much, Chair. Let me welcome the presentations. On Nagoa, I just want to find out what was the real issue behind the issue. Because the sticking point around the disagreement on Nagoa was based on the issue of poultry, which is obviously the largest sector in terms of the agreement and the trade relations. The first two, there were no problem. What was behind the issue? Because of, I think, the third largest sector in terms of the trade agreement, and not hold random the whole agreement. So I just want to find out what's the real issue when it comes to that. Because of, if you look at it, surely it cannot be that only the third largest sector in this whole agreement can make the whole agreement collapse. And in terms of jobs, yes, I see there's a job deficit in terms of the South Africa and the US, but I think it must be taken in a context that when it comes to Agoa, it's not only South Africa, it's the whole of Africa. But one would want to find out where the problem is, because of at some point we were job sharing in PE in terms of the car manufacturing, the automobile sector, but yet here we've got the largest trade agreement in Agoa. Is it not our own fault that we have lost the jobs, or we've got a job deficit with Agoa? And it's not only with Agoa. You go with also with China, with BRICS and everywhere. We seem to be having a job deficit. And what is the problem? Is it our own problem, or is it that we don't know how to package our self-interest in those multilateral agreements? It's not only Agoa that we find a job imbalances in terms of which ones, who benefits. So I would like to get clarity on that as well. Then on the IORA, I just want to find out in terms of the inclusion of Somalia in this association, in terms of the peace and security, in terms of the peace and security in the rim, what does it mean for them? Because we all know that Somalia is renowned for piracy, and doesn't that in itself pose a threat to security and sustainability of this rim, and the inclusion of Somalia there of the strategy to ensure that there is a counter to the issue of peace and security towards the rim? So I would like to find clarity on that one. Thank you.
Italian?
I just want to talk a little bit about the AGOA. The way it's coming across is as though the U.S. is got the big stick and is beating us with that stick. Now, on page 3 of the presentation, it says here that an agreement was signed to admit 3 U.S. meets into North Africa. I take it that agreement was signed by Mr. Lord Davis. So we entered into this willingly. But what I'd like to have clarity on, it said the U.S. has concern about South Africa policy positions. Now, which policies specifically? Is it our trade and industry policy? Is it our international relations policy? What is what of it? This morning I heard on the radio that we are in danger of not meeting that deadline. Now, what exactly is the holdup? I'm not getting that answer in the presentation, very good presentation, but I'm not actually getting the answer as to what is the problem. The AGOA agreement on the whole seems to have benefited South Africa, but we seem to be hung up on the chicken aspect. Now, let's talk specifics. What is it about the chickens that is a problem? And then it's affecting agreement. And just to go to the jobs on, it's not number to this page, the impact of AGOA on the South African economy. AGOA creates over 62,000 jobs in South Africa. Then further down it says the motor industry supports 50,000 jobs in PE and Gauteng. Is the 50,000 included in the 62,000 that's quoted, or is it separate? It's included. Right, so I just want to know, what is the reason for not meeting that 15th of March deadline? Where is the holdup? And, obviously I think AGOA is right in the trade and industry ministry, and, we have a supporting role to play. Then on the Indian Ocean situation, a very fascinating presentation. Did you attend the climate change conference, especially in view of one of the sustainable goals in terms of the blue economy? And what is South Africa's role in that? Thank you.
Thank you. You want to come back?
Yeah,
I have noticed all the AGOA. Though you have mentioned some of the countries, others are not green now. What I want to find out is that deliberate, is it because Somalia is perhaps not yet part, you don't know which government to talk to. I just want to find out, is it a mistake? And if so, what the countries are not, it's not only them, there's another one somewhere next to India, which is also not there. Is it part of China? I'm not sure. And there's also another one between Iran and India. I don't know what country it is. But I just want to find out, is there a deliberate way of doing it, or are they, but they don't have representatives so far now in the conversation.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Now can I come in?
Tell you about the issue. The question has been partly asked by Honorable Talia, but I think that to end by saying that my president, U.S. president, for saying that Qatar is not meeting up what eligible requirements. What are those requirements? Also, the motion to suspend South Africa in March. But what about the agricultural provinces? When you talk about, what about, because I'm concerned about job losses on the agricultural sector. So now what is the position? so as to retain the jobs in this agricultural sector. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. My comments and questions are very much linked to what my colleague has said. The first observation is the bullet, you have not numbered this, where we're talking about the future and the U.S. trade and investment relations. Where we're saying the South African government will consult business and labor before formulating South Africa's position on the future trade disposition with the USA. And I wanted to say that it is only very correct that the South African government must take into confidence the leadership of labor and the leadership of government in their entirety, different associations and chambers of commerce, about our trade relations with certain countries and the threats that are beginning to emerge there and the opportunities that could emerge as well. Because like Mohalapa was saying, or was it Mohalapa or someone else, on weather, if for instance the automotive and other things will still benefit South Africa's export to the USA. But if it comes to the poultry beef and other things, the agricultural, if it dies out, can't we find opportunities elsewhere within the BRICS community, India, China, Russia, or even within the African continent where we've got Nepal? Because we have grown massively there, perhaps we can go there and allow this one to lapse. And whether South Africa, maybe you may not be able to answer this now, but something to think about, whether the post-ACOA trade relations with Africa, well, they are saying based on the free trade agreement with Africa, South Africa will have to look at its own interest in this instance. Because, you see, the problem here is that ACOA is a unilateral decision of the American Congress, and therefore it can be withdrawn unilaterally. That's the problem, and there's not much we can do. The decision was taken in 2000, but I would imagine that we have had trade relations with the USA long before then. So there are things that we can still trade with the USA. If, for instance, we continue to stay with the USA and we lose this duty-free dispensation, does it mean we can no longer sell to the USA? Because we, of course, it will affect the price, but what will be the most serious consequences? And are we, as government, engaging the poultry industry, the beef industry, etc., of South Africa, so that they begin to position themselves differently? On the and just before I part with this one, I wanted to raise something that is good, but it is also very controversial about Deputy Minister, about the Afrikaners, the Jewish people. The Afrikaners are not a very big community in South Africa. But their history on how they wanted to survive in the midst of a very unhealthy environment during the British colony and as a minority in South Africa, and their own white economic affirmative action from 1910 up to 1994. If you look at that site, what they did to replace that which was English with that which they wanted, whether it was the banks or the cooperatives, the insurance industries, etc., until they found a space to be middle class and to be leaders of big industry. The only thing is that we are not sharing that experience. And the Afghans are now indigenous Africans in South Africa. it's amazing when you look at that. Of course, there's been ruthlessness in doing certain things, unfortunately, towards the African people. But for their own survival, that is interesting. The Jewish, people, same thing. The problem is the ruthlessness that has gone with them thing towards the other people. You see, which actually threatens in the long term their own survival. It's very, very interesting. It's something that every now and then you must look at it. But I think for themselves, this is what they're able to do. But in the long term, God has fallen witnesses. It's very controversial. you can come in.
Just as a Jewish person, I'm very interested in what the Jewish violence we caused, because I think we were persecuted the most in throughout the ages in the history. But not to rewrite the book. No. You must distinguish between Israelis and Jewish. There's two different things between Jewish and Israeli. Let me educate you. But just in terms of what you're saying there, I think it is, when you're in this committee, diplomacy is quite important. I think as we maintain the decorum of dignity and in what we say and how we say it. Something like this Goa presentation, the deputy minister rightfully said, it's sometimes like a gift from America, almost a negative connotation, but the fact is, who needs who more? I think it does go down to that, and I think we all need to understand that. But sometimes we have this arrogance about us, or this sense of far more importance than what we may be worth on the world stage. And I think at times when we're looking for friends, or friends are looking for us, it's always important to not just remember. Chair, you and I have had the discussion before, and I'm very excited to see we're all sharing the same ideas today in terms of who's colonizing who and languages that we might have to learn. But the truth is, I think sometimes in self-introspection, if we lose our Goa, we lose out. America doesn't really lose out. They'll import the cars that can get a state, they'll get the duties, they'll have, but we lose out. In terms of what we're saying around race and around religion and all of that, sometimes it's upon us to understand. I've always said with the Middle East issue, which is always a thorny issue, it's something that haunts the committee in many instances. The Middle East issue is about a divorce and not a marriage, and I've always said that. This is about Palestinians and Israelis. It's not about Jewish, Muslim, Christian. The Christian people that are Zionists that believe in Israel, we don't go burn them at the stake. That's their opinion, that they read from the Bible, that's their choice. But when it comes to us in this center, we're the ones that are showing leadership. We're the ones that have to show guidance. We're the ones that have to talk about these issues and then educate people outside. And often we get to say that we get this language wrong. Now, we've had racists or people accused of being racist merely by the way they say things. And I cringe, sometimes I say there's three types of racists. There's racist that is racist. You'll never change that person. He's a racist inherently. But then there's a person that is not so racist intentionally. They say things like Jews cause violence. But if they get told what the real history is, they say sorry, that person's not a racist. He doesn't hate people inherently. He just doesn't educate. I hear people going, those people. Those people are derogatory. And then there's the third type of person who actually enters into the debate and expresses an opinion, and then he gets lynched. But we as a people here in this community, we should be showing guidance. We should be showing people how it's done and showing people that this is the way to go. So thank you, Chair. Choose to not pull fire.
I was going to say something about the IORA. I didn't hear you saying whether we are training people, page 6 of IORA, whether we are training people to deploy, to have skills, expertise in ship making, in fisheries, etc. Because historically, in the South African context, largely you find white people involved in these industries, particularly in the Western Cape, up to P sea because they are next to the sea. But you need more of those who are historically excluded in this industry to go to the different colleges.
And whether we are taking care of that. And I haven't seen anywhere where we have quantified like we have done with AGOA. Well, it's page 4. Produce goods and services worth over 1 trillion, intra-IORA trade is about 6 to 7 billion. Okay, I had missed that, but I would have loved
that to talk about fishery, how much it is contributing, and ship building, whatever. The different aspects of the maritime industry. I'm sure that information must be mainly shared with the operation parties. That is why whoever was saying it's important that you engage with small business in us, minister who are daily, then some information in the package for both committees so that you work with us on this.
The Deputy Minister has said that
our committee must also start moving out to committees to be able to explain South Africa's position on different matters, but as part of enhancing and deepening public diplomacy. These are some of the questions that will arise and we must be able to answer cogently. Over to you now.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm just thinking maybe the portfolio committee needs to have one day set aside for just from the department. Yes, there's much more to debate, but you know you are there. There's time constraint. Let's start with our table and start by saying first, definitely the gift to Africa is not sent by us. It was a repeat. It's a repeat of what America. America said bluntly that you had no say. AGOA is our gift to Africa. That's the first thing. And I think there was a question of you know what seemed to be a problem. You see, a problem starts with a decision of forming what you name as a gift is unilateral. And you have certain policy, your own policy, that haven't been debated with any other person. And that in itself is a challenge. And I mean, if you look at what we're debating earlier around BRICS and even FOCAC, and what we're talking about here is chalk and cheese. Because as countries, if you take an initiative as OPEC, as China did with OPEC, take an initiative, they are using their money, but at some stage, there's a process where you need to agree with those countries about how this is going to work. It cannot be as unilateral as we experience. You know, member is asking what's wrong with the poultry. What's wrong with the poultry is there's no argument that we are short of poultry in South Africa. America decides itself, we want to dump those pieces of poultry that are creating obesity in our country. Now, we're running away from obesity too. And, you know, besides that, we didn't ask. So if we're sitting around the table and they ask us, what is it that you want? Maybe we would have chosen something else. But they decide they want to dump the chicken. They decide they want to see it in our shelves in a particular time. They decide. If you don't do ABC, you know, we'll sit off the deck. Now, that's unilateral to an extreme. Yes, we might sit around this table and say we need America more than it needs us. But you see, it's really at times taking a chain to your neck for 100 years or more, instead of saying we need to begin to find alternatives to do certain things. We need to begin to do alternatives. Now, I know at first when you take such decisions, it might be terrible because maybe you are going to lose those jobs, maybe you are going to lose certain things, but you see, there are certain things at times that needs to happen for you to be able to make your priority, your country's priority. Now, I think, I mean, there are other areas that would be responded to by DCG Maya, but I think we don't even need to be encouraged that we need to begin to look at other opportunities, because today it's the chicken, tomorrow is going to be something else, and the day tomorrow is going to be give me your son, if you don't give me your son, this is what I'm going to do. Especially when this doesn't only deal with trade issues. You see, this is the trick with AGOA. It doesn't only deal with trade issues. It also deals with country policies. Country policies, they must interfere in the BEE, they must interfere in affirmative action, they must interfere in intellectual property, they must interfere, if you're saying, the private security, not only of their country, is much, much bigger than the private security combined of South Africa. So we need to manage that. And they would say, no. We don't want you to tamper with that. So they want also to formulate South African policies, which is wrong. We're not saying, you know, now we are in there, now we have that arrangement, but I think for me, what screams very loud, in particular with one of their conditions that are saying, not only the government, anybody, even a person who sits in the street in America, can wake up tomorrow and say, I'm sitting on this street because South Africa prevented me from doing ABC. And we would be back into a discussion of saying, you know, there's somebody who's complaining about South Africa, and therefore we completely depend on them to say, we will continue with this thing, we won't continue with others. Yes, if, as Lucha was asking, if we show them a finger, we'll lose some of the things, free trade and this and that and that. And it would be costly to South Africa. But I think we also need to say, you know, you will try and not lose until they touch which button. You know? So, I'm saying, Che, the unilateral process of running what you call is a partnership with Africa. That's why they are not calling it a partnership. They are saying it's a gift. The unilateral way of doing that really makes a country a I don't know what kind of a country. This is exactly why whilst we continue with AGOA, we need to look at new opportunities. And I can tell you there are many, many, many untapped, including Inter-Africa Trade, there are many, many untapped areas in different regions that are begging South Africa to trade with them. And some of the unilateral also processes here are preventing us from going direct to those countries. So I just want to leave it there.
They are leaving. They are leaving after 12. They've got an engagement with the minister. That's the request they make. CDG or whoever is on time.
Thank you, Chair. I will try to be very brief. There was a question raised as to what the real problem is with the poultry, and why are we not hearing anything about beef and pork. There are actually more serious problems with beef and pork. And the reason we are not hearing a lot is because when our veterinarian, that, let me say, raised these questions, then the discussions became very muted in those areas. With pork, for instance, they want to give us the shoulder of pork. That is the biggest network of the nervous system and the lymph nodes that carry the disease that pork normally has. And we negotiated with them until they realized that it's not going to happen then. But now, some ways have been found to make sure that we do admit that shoulder. Also, the abuse has SMD, foot and mouth disease, and their chicken had avian flu in many areas. So there is a threat that the meat that they want to bring into the country could wipe out our heads, our stocks. And this is in the documentation that has been shared. This is in open discussions that have been had between South Africa and the U.S. So it's not just about entry of the chicken into our country. Yes, we stand to lose jobs, but most importantly, we stand to lose the stock, the heads, your chickens, your cattle, and your pig stocks. As to what is holding us back from meeting the 15th of March deadline, there is a shipment, a huge shipment that has already left Atlanta on its way to South Africa. Yes. But the Americans don't just want their product in South Africa, they want their product on our shelves by the 15th of March. So that is where the main problem is. On policy, there's a question that was raised on what the policy interests are. The minister has already touched on some of them. First and foremost, they would like us to equate them to how we trade with the European Union. They don't understand why we don't give them a free trade arrangement. Yes. But with all those free trade arrangements, there are processes that are followed. But because there is this issue of this gift hanging over us, we are expected to give in to all the demands without following the due processes that we normally follow. And also, some of these issues are contained in their statutes, in their acts. The first one being the United States Trade Act of 1974, and the second one being the AGOA Act that we domesticated. So some of those things are already domesticated in our legislation. They are fighting against us introducing the Intellectual Property Bill and the Private Security Bill, those amendments. And also, they have an issue with the BEE policy, because they say all these issues mean we are keeping them out of areas where Americans could be benefiting, and that is contained in their ash that we have made our ash, especially the Agua one. On a day when we're not transporting, and the committee not transporting, Chair, would like to unpack these and help make copies of these documentations available. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, very briefly. In terms of the question about deploying strategic positions, we do have an official who's seconded to the AURA Secretariat. He's essentially the number two in the organization, supporting the Secretary General, and we plan to keep him until about December 2018. We will also, to coincide with our chairing, we're going to put forward a candidate for the Secretary General position, which will come open end of next year. In terms of the criteria for dialogue partners, I think the Deputy Minister had some of this debate in Padang, where some of the members were questioning, you know, how does Germany come now as the latest? They're so far away from Indian Ocean and so on. But as far as I'm aware, there's no formal criteria set down for dialogue partners. In the discussions about whether to admit somebody's a dialogue partner or not, it's really just about do we feel as members that they have something to contribute, either financially in terms of investment, or trade facilitation, or whatever it might be, or in terms of necessary skills that they can impart, necessary technology they can impart, or models of best practice they could impart. That's essential, but there's no formal criteria. As to what they see as advantages, you know, that's their game. I don't know, you know, I can answer for what they see as their advantages in our order. There's no quotas as such. It's a very small, lean secretariat, so there's no quotas. But there's currently a South African, an Indian, and Australian as the staff supporting the SG. But there's no formal quotas. The issue of the non-green path, I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for picking up that we haven't coloured in Somalia. I think this was a map that we had done prior to Padang where Somalia hadn't yet joined. So we'll certainly correct that on the map. The other areas... The other areas is mainly, you would have seen on that side, Pakistan and Myanmar, who haven't joined yet, but I believe the Secretary says Myanmar has started pulling out feelers about joining. And in the chair, your question about the training of people, certain skills, the shipmaking and seafarers, the role of DERCO is essentially to contact international partners to facilitate opportunities. But the actual implementers are largely, you know, the operations practice unit is presidency, it's DIA, it's other people like the South African Marine Institute. So I personally am not aware of any particular figures around who's been trained in shipbuilding, who's been trained as seafarers. I'm just aware that, for example, we have sent youth to various countries in training as seafarers. I know Philippines has a program, although they're not an IORA member, and so on and so forth. But the detail of the implementation, once DERCO facilitates the opportunity, I'm really not sure, Chair.
Can I just... Indian Ocean, it's a very rich rim. Definitely when we talk about dialogue partners, the discussion we've been having is exactly do we admit them as members, do they sit in our meetings as members of the RIM when we discuss, or they are given an opportunity at some stage to interact with, to dialogue with us. And I think we've agreed that they would have their opportunity. Because surely these are the countries, big countries that are very far from Indian Ocean. But they have both, yes, they can contribute, but they have both interest, economic interest, and security interest in what is happening in the Indian realm. Now, this also, I think, is pushed by the fact that we have an association, it's getting stronger and stronger. The first time the expedition happened 50 years ago, we were all operating separately. India was the one that was championing the expedition together with other countries. Now there's a second expedition, which
is trying to find what lies at the bottom of Indian Ocean. We're not sure. It might be that we are sitting here, there's minerals under Indian Ocean that can benefit all those that are in that rim. Surely everybody wants to be there when that happens. There's also, somebody mentioned Somalia and pirates in that. There's piracy not only when if that piracy affects all countries. So other countries in this would be there to assist with security, which, I mean, they always put as a priority. To assist with security, that would prevent that piracy. That expedition chair, what is important about it is answering your question. This is where, when it happens, this is where the skills development will happen. Already, I think it's the environmental department is engaging with that process. It's having South Africans being deployed in different countries for research purposes and for other skills that we need in South Africa that we don't have when it comes to the ocean economy. So at the end of that expedition, we're hoping to have more qualified researchers around this topic of blue economy and shipbuilding in that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, and a big thank you to all the Honorable members who contributed in asking questions and in making comments. The last part has indicated that an ongoing engagement with the department and beyond the department, perhaps we should know more about the trading industry in Holland and how we are putting in people and how we are benefiting employment, trading and all of this into those areas. Mr. Hopkins, I think we'll still be interested for you, Deputy Minister. The people who are deploying in a forum where we are serving, you know, Southern Parliamentary Forum, the Commonwealth, all of those things actively identified by the ERCO to deploy South Africa at a strategic leadership and managerial level, so leadership was fine, but people must also be able to work there at different other operational levels. We think we are very keen in those areas. The Pan-African Parliament is also a case in point. I don't know whether AU, for instance, besides being in the chair, which will come to an end, are there people employed there who are South Africans who will remain there and advise the South African leadership. When they come there, they want to know what are the issues in the AU. They get briefed somewhere. I usually kind of gather some information for the leadership in the Pan-African Parliament, everywhere else. And I think leadership can look at that. Doesn't have to share information with all of us about who is there, but that is be done is very important. It was Mahalaba. Then I have an angle cabinet, but it's probably. Yeah. Oh. There's news in the stigma in another one. International interest. With that, Mshangan over the West Yabonga.